Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Frankly, this whole thing is rigged. Even the media, every day I turn on the news and all of the newscasters are making me look so bad.
And how are we doing that?
By taking all of the things I say and all of the things I do and putting them on TV.
Hi, Patrice. let me start by walking over to you just as I practiced. Right, left, right, left, right, left, plant, speak. Now, Patrice, you're a teacher?
No.
You have kids?
No.
You like kids?
No.
You've seen kids?
Yeah.
Okay, great. We're bonding already. Oh, my friend Patrice.
I have a fantastic relationship with Mexico, okay? I have personally met with the Mexican president. I forget his name. I think it was something like Mr. Guacamole. I'm sorry, excuse me, Señor Guacamole. I also met his beautiful wife, Taquito, and their twin children, Chips and Salsa.
I'm the only candidate up here who's not a billionaire. I don't have a super PAC. I don't even have a backpack. I carry my stuff around loose in my arms like a professor. You know, between classes. I own one pair of underwear. That's it. Some of these billionaires, they got 3-4 pairs. And I don't have a dryer. I have to put my clothes on the radiator. So who do you want as president? One of these Washington insiders? Or a guy who has one pair of clean underwear that he dries on a radiator?
I need all my supporters to get out there and vote on Election Day. Mark your calendars, write it down. Here's the date. It's November 35th.
And here we are, November 35th. You know, there was actually a pro-Trump dirty trick revealed over the weekend where in one state, someone was contacting Clinton supporters to tell them that they could vote by text. You cannot vote by text. In case anybody listening to the Brian Lehrer Show right now, and good morning, everyone, thinks that maybe you can vote by text. Another version of that used by candidates in other elections has been to do robocalls with the wrong election day. Maybe not November 35th, maybe November 10th instead of November 8th, but November 35th made me think of it. So we heard Alec Baldwin as Trump from Saturday Night Live in clips 1, 3, and 5, plus Kate McKinnon as Clinton and Larry David as Bernie Sanders. And later in the show, in just about an hour, Alec Baldwin will join us for a few minutes to break the tension a little bit and talk about playing Trump on Saturday Night Live. And, of course, the whole situation is really not at all funny. But having a sense of humor is one of the ways we'll try this morning to help keep everyone from drowning in the oceans of your anxiety or help keep you from being trapped in a glass case of emotion.
I'm in a glass case of emotion!
As Will Ferrell said in Anchorman and Chicago Cub Anthony Rizzo repeated during the seventh game of the World Series. So our phones are open through this election day morning, and it's been such an emotional election year for just about everyone. I would like to invite you all to call in and talk about that on a few levels. Number one, simply, how did you feel as you voted this morning? Was it different from other times you've cast a vote? For anyone who has already voted, what emotions were you feeling, and were they different from what you expected or from other election days at your polling place? 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Also, and we'll talk about this on our election night coverage tonight, too. We start at 7. Have you had any emotions that have surprised you this election season? For example, one friend of mine, a mom of a 6-year-old daughter who feels very strongly about the possibility of a first woman president, this mom told me she was taken aback by one of her own feelings. It was sadness that her grandmother, who died 22 years ago, doesn't know her 6-year-old daughter at this moment of the possible election of the first woman president. She felt that sadness, and then she felt surprised by her own sadness about that. After all, they didn't come close to meeting. The grandmother died 16 years before the daughter was born. But that's one example. So maybe you've also been surprised by any of your own emotions today or this election year. 212-433 WNYC. We also saw on Facebook today a former colleague from here who now lives in Boston posted that she's dedicating her vote to her mother, who died in a car crash when our colleague was 2. And that got us thinking, too. Is anyone else dedicating your vote to someone today? 212-433-WNYC. So no matter who you're for, any emotions as you voted, any emotions this whole election season that have surprised you, and anyone who is dedicating your vote to somebody today, 212-433-WNYC, or tweet at Brian Lehrer. And as your calls are starting to come in, our first guest today is Washington Post columnist Catherine Rampell. Hi, Catherine. Thanks for doing this. Welcome to WNYC.
Good to be here.
And I saw you tweeted this morning, why is there no happy tears emoji? Did that relate to your feelings as you voted?
A little bit. And actually, several people tweeted back at me. Well, there is a laughing emoji with tears, but it's not about comedy for me. I think that there was something very emotional about voting today. For me, despite my hesitations about both candidates, the ability to vote for the first female president is quite a moving experience, regardless of your politics, I think. The ability to vote for a candidate who you think represents the struggle for the soul of American democracy, I think it's a very emotional, anxiety-ridden experience today heading to the polls.
And here's one via Twitter from a listener named Liz who writes, I never cried casting my vote before. One of ours is on the ballot for president, meaning a woman, thinking about my long-deceased feminist mom, posts our listener Liz. Listeners, how did you feel? And did your own feeling surprise you as you voted? If you already voted today, tweet at Brian Lehrer. Our lines are full. We'll get to some of you in a couple of minutes as we talk to Washington Post columnist Catherine Rampell. You also retweeted a little soliloquy, I see, written by Mark Elliott, saying goodbye to Donald Trump and his cast of characters. This was a little premature, I guess, since the election isn't over yet, but it struck me like it was a new version of Goodnight Moon.
Actually, that was my column today.
Oh, that was you?
Oh, yes, that was me.
Oh, would you recite it for us? Can you do that?
Of course. One second. Let me pull up the full thing. Yes. So in my column today is about a farewell to the media's frenemy, Donald Trump, by which I mean that Donald Trump has been very good for the media's bottom line. Every day there's a new outrage, there's a new something to cover, to write a think piece on, a diatribe, whatever. And so it's been addictive and quite good for traffic and viewership, I'm sure. But for many of us, it's also been very distressing, given the rhetoric of this campaign. So I wrote a little riff, inspired by Goodnight Moon, about what I hope I will be reading tonight after the results come in. It's goodbye Omarosa, goodbye Newt, goodbye Corey, goodbye ill-fitting suit, goodbye Big League, goodbye Like a Dog, goodbye Braggadocious, goodbye Pepe the Frog, goodbye MAGA, which is Make America Great Again, goodbye Muslim Ban, goodbye John Barron, goodbye Orange Tan. Goodbye, looser libel laws and beauty queen flab. Goodbye, Article 12. Goodbye, P-word grab. Goodbye, birthers. Goodbye, contractors suing. Goodbye, blood from wherever. Goodbye, poll unskewing. Goodbye, tariffs. Goodbye, wall. Goodbye, deplorables, one and all. And goodbye, Trump, whom I next hope to see only, and I mean only, on the new Trump TV.
Huh. And our more patched-in listeners will get all those references, Pepe the Frog, Omarosa, et cetera. And I'm glad
these are all of the memes and many news cycles of this past campaign that provided fleeting moments of entertainment, perhaps. But I will be glad to be rid of them, glad to be moving on from this election and on to new news, hopefully policy, more issues of substance, and just moving on in general.
And I'm glad you're having fun on Twitter, but are you confident he's really going down today?
I am not confident. This was, as I mentioned in the piece, a sort of hopeful lullaby. The numbers suggest that Hillary Clinton is favored to win. A number of swing states, battleground states, have tilted in her favor. But, you know, it's not a sure thing. You know, there is still a chance. This is a very bizarre election. It's hard to say who will show up, to what extent the polls actually reflect turnout. Turnout is very high from most reports that we've seen so far, both the early voting numbers and based on, you know, reports of queues today around the country.
And I'll add my anecdotal evidence. I voted at my polling place at 6:10 this morning, 10 minutes after it opened, and I was the 45th person to vote. Actually, I should say I got to my polling place at 6:10, and I had to stand in line for 25 minutes. And usually, because that's my usual pattern, because my shift, I'll vote like right at 6 o'clock and then come to work, and I'm usually voter number one, voter number two. There's nobody there. They're still setting up the machines. Well, today I was number 45, and I had to wait for 25 minutes getting to my voting place at 10 after 6 in the morning.
That has been my experience as well. I think I showed up around 7 something, and there was a huge line. My polling place is actually, conveniently enough, in my building, and I've been primarily working from home this morning, just given various developments and not being able to tear myself away from my computer. And I've run up and down the stairs to see what the line is like, and it's crazy. And remember, this is in New York. New York is not a contested state.
Right.
There is basically zero chance, maybe not zero, but very, very tiny chance that Donald Trump will win this state. And yet people are motivated to go out and vote. In other states, in the battleground states, you know, there are reports of people lining up, you know, hours before the polls actually opened because they wanted to vote and they wanted to have a say. So I can only imagine what it's like to be one of these voters in a state that has a more decisive role in who wins the Electoral College.
And in case you're curious, Catherine, and haven't seen it, and listeners, in case you're curious and haven't seen it, we now have what I guess is the final forecast from Nate Silver at 538, which got posted before the show. And, of course, he got all 50 states right in 2012. He got 49 of the 50, all except Indiana, in 2008. Indiana, which went by 1/10 of 1 percentage point. So Nate Silver now gives Clinton 302 electoral votes, 32 more than the 270 needed to clinch. And that's an improvement for Clinton just in the last day. Yesterday morning, Nate was on with us, and he had Trump ahead by a hair in Florida, Trump ahead by a hair in North Carolina. But today he sees a 55% chance of Clinton taking each of those states, plus a 77% chance in Pennsylvania. We'll have the governor of Pennsylvania on with us, folks, by the way, at 10:30. 77% chance in New Hampshire, 79% in Michigan for all the breathless campaigning in Michigan by both sides the last few days. And if Nate is going to nail all 50 states like he did in 2012, he has Trump holding Arizona and Georgia, which seem to be in play possibly for a Democrat for the first time in a long time, Clinton winning Colorado and New Mexico, and Trump, not Evan McMullen, winning Utah. Any states you're especially watching today, Catherine?
Yeah, Florida, my home state.
Everybody, along with everybody else.
Along with everybody else. You know, Florida is a very fraught place election-wise. I was there in 2000 when we basically embarrassed ourselves nationwide with butterfly ballots and hanging chads. And I will be watching it carefully to see whether there are any other, well, embarrassment is maybe too strong of a word, but peculiarities. I'll be watching my home county, which is Palm Beach County, to see how that goes. And I'll be wondering, you know, what the many Hispanic voters in this state, what effect they have on the polls. There were reports that there were record high numbers of Hispanic voters voting early.
Yeah. And with 70% of the projected vote in Florida having come early,
which is crazy.
Crazy, yeah. And unprecedented, and maybe the future of our country, but that's another conversation.
Well, if you're a Floridian, I think it's particularly impressed upon you to do everything you can to have your vote counted, given, you know, the recount drama of 2000. So it's not surprising to me in a way, even though these numbers are very high, it's not surprising that there are so many people who said, I'm going to get there early just in case anything goes wrong.
Right. And two journalists from Florida have told me that because of this early vote, they may well be able to call Florida by 8 o'clock tonight.
Wow.
And
I had not heard that.
If that's, not definitive, but two different journalists have said that. And if that's the case, Trump has no path without Florida. Hillary has a potential path even without Florida. Trump really has no path without Florida. So if it's called by 8 o'clock for Clinton, the networks aren't going to call the presidential election. But you could start reading your poem a few more times.
Yes. The poem may have been premature, but I am holding out hope cautiously that, as I said, we will be done with this election, that Donald Trump and some of his very toxic rhetoric will no longer be newsworthy, and we can move on as a country.
Washington Post columnist Catherine Rampell. Do you want to hang around and take a few phone calls with me?
Sure.
On people's emotions, we're inviting you to call in how it actually felt as you voted today, if you already have voted, or feelings that have surprised you during this election season, or if you're dedicating your vote to anybody. Melissa in Huntington, you're on WNYC. Hi, Melissa.
Hey there.
Happy Election Day.
Oh, yeah. I've been waiting for this all year.
And you
panic
voted?
Panic-stricken and everything.
What? Panic-stricken?
Yeah, I've been very anxious watching the polls tighten over the past several weeks. But I felt really emotional and empowered today, taking my 2.5-year-old with me to the polls and voting this morning for Hillary Clinton, first woman who's going to be president of the United States.
What does it mean to you?
Firstly, I think she's probably one of the most qualified people to ever run for president. But having a woman represent the United States, me as an OBGYN, I first and foremost think of women's health, women's reproductive rights, and I think she stands there with me and will protect women everywhere going forward.
Melissa, is something ticking in the background there?
No.
Catherine, is that on your line?
It is not.
Huh. It's
I
very,
hear it, though.
It's very ominous.
Oh.
Oh, and it just stopped.
It's
but
a countdown.
Melissa, thank you very much for starting us
thank
off.
Thank you.
And let's go to Kiki in Red Hook. Kiki, you're on WNYC. Happy Election Day.
Hey. Good morning. I just wanted to say I voted for Hillary this morning, and I felt really choked up. My eyes welled up with tears. I also had my 2.5-year-old with me, and he kept saying all morning, I want to vote. No, you're going to have to wait another 16 years. But I will say, as far as emotions are concerned, my family are Trump supporters, which is really concerning and created a lot of problems in our family and just emotional trust with them. And I created a secret Facebook group that a lot of Brooklynites joined. My family supports Trump. I need support. And a lot of people join that. I'm also part of the Pantsuit Nation. So today I voted in a pantsuit because you can't wear anything to say who you're going to vote for. So there are 2.5 million people right now in that group. It's a secret group. And we're all just elevating each other. In the beginning, I wasn't 100% for Hillary. And I just didn't, and not that I was for Trump, but, as time passed and I started to see what was going on, I thought, well, this is definitely the best candidate. She's very qualified. And we also participated in the pantsuit flash mob, the power dance flash mob that took place in Union Square and got 10 million views online. And
yeah.
Last night, the pantsuit flash mob performed with Madonna for like a pop-up thing in Washington Square Park. So just I think that the emotion today is proud to be a woman and proud to see that we as a country have moved so far forward. And it's just a great thing. And I hope that everyone, no matter what
third candidate is going out and votes today.
Kiki, thank you very much. So, Catherine, we've gotten two with the feeling of pride and tears welling up in the first caller. But a couple of people are calling in, a lot of people really are calling in with other emotions, anxiety, nervousness. Sandra in Carmel told our screener that she felt secretive. Sandra, did we get that right? Hi, you're on WNYC.
Oh, hi. Well, thank you for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Sure can.
Yeah, so I actually feel a little embarrassed having heard the previous two callers. I think I should feel proud, but given the level of emotion around this election, I didn't even feel like I could even start a conversation about who I was voting for. I voted for Clinton as well. Every time I would bring up any political topics, it would turn into a very, very heated argument. I didn't even want to share with my children who I was voting for because the kids in the middle school were, you know, being bullied. It's very toxic. And
can I ask, the kids in the middle school are being bullied over politics?
Yes.
In what way?
If they were declaring who they were voting for, their friends, if their parents were voting for somebody different, they would get beat up over it.
Both ways, or?
So my personal experience is it was mostly the children whose parents were voting for Trump. They would be very aggressive towards the children who would support Hillary Clinton. So it was very sad. I think it was the example.
Was there language? Nasty girl? Pardon? Anything? Was there language?
I don't know if there was language. I can't say for sure. But, mm-hmm. but I do know that I was warned to make sure that, you know, my children do not engage in any political conversation in the schools because it was getting heated.
Wow. Sandra, thank you very much. Catherine Rampell, Washington Post columnist. How about that?
You know, I have heard stories about bad behavior at schools related to the election, but I think it's not confined, the high emotions are not confined to children. I read a story recently about a hospital in Long Island, I believe it was, where there was a cardio rehab gym, and there was a sign outside the door saying, "You are not allowed to talk politics in the hospital, people's lives are at risk," or something to that effect, that they're trying to keep people's heart rates down. That clearly things are so heated, emotions are running so high, there's a lot of distrust of people on the other side of the political divide, that even adults are potentially putting their health at risk because they are getting into these very vigorous debates. So it's not confined to children. It's adults, and maybe these are seemingly silly examples. But I do wonder what happens after today. You know, I was talking earlier about how we can finally move on, but there's a part of me that feels like, well, are we finally going to be able to heal this divide? Both candidates are historically disliked. Antagonism is running high amongst voters as well as the candidates themselves. Whoever wins is going to face half or nearly half of the population viewing them as potentially illegitimate, not their choice, certainly. And I don't know how we're going to heal this rupture, how we're going to return to governance. In a way, it'll be a relief to have this phase over, but then what comes next? That's also a very right. troubling and anxiety-inducing right. period.
Well, I could see scenarios in which governing resumes, in which the Republican Party, more or less, is just as happy to be done with Donald Trump, and where it starts to look a little ridiculous to keep investigating Hillary over things that she did what will be two presidential terms ago as Secretary of State. And she can go over the heads of those members of Congress and appeal to the American people. to tell their Congress members to let the country get on with our business and oppose her on policy if they want to oppose her on policy, but let's get on with it. And so we'll see.
I hope you're right. It does appear that a number of our federal legislators have already been laying the groundwork to oppose her nominees. You know, we've had several senators at this point saying no Supreme Court hearings, or at least no one that Hillary, a theoretical President Hillary would appoint, would even be considered. You know, we've had Jason Chaffetz, who has been leading some of the investigations on the in the House, saying that they have years' worth of material to continue pursuing if and when Hillary Clinton takes the White House. So it doesn't seem crazy to me to think that there will be continued obstruction of some kind, regardless of whether the president, the next president, appeals to the American public to get on with things and to return to the business of running our country.
Eric in Queens dedicated his vote to somebody this morning. Eric, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling. Eric, you there? Let's try to get back to Eric, because I like the idea that he dedicated his vote. And we invited anybody who dedicated their vote to call in or tweet. And I see that somebody started a hashtag, it looks like, dedicate the vote. And the one who wrote it wrote, I dedicate the vote to Senator Sanders for fighting like hell and changing the conversation forward. Anybody else want to use the hashtag dedicate the vote and post and tweet at Brian Lehrer as you use the hashtag dedicate the vote? Who are you dedicating your vote to today? Ken and Merrick, you're on WNYC. Hi, Ken.
Yeah, hi. Thanks. Big fan of the show.
Thank you.
Usually, Presidential Election Day is the day of pride for me and my family. And this year I was excited because my two college-age kids it was their first time to vote, and they registered, and they voted by absentee ballot. And my wife and I got up this morning, and she usually goes ahead of me because we both work, but she's been very anxious, and she said, I could tell it, and I knew she wanted me to go with her to our local, you know, elementary school. And I didn't anticipate any problems with Trump supporters being in my upper middle class neighborhood, but she was visibly anxious. And we went there and we voted. And I texted my sons and I said, I'm very proud of my citizen family, but I didn't enjoy it because I'm extremely angry. And your guest touched on the reason why I'm angry. And she said, Donald Trump has been a frenemy. And when this first started, I said to myself, well, this is just the media. I mean, this is just a news, one-time news story. This guy's not qualified. He'll never, you know, proceed, you know. But because the news departments are not independent of the money, you know, the money department in these news, you know, in
cable channels,
radio
especially
stations, it influences. And so it's kiss and tell journalism, and he is a frenemy. And the news stations and news conglomerates have made a fortune. And they propelled him. And Donald Trump played the media. He played the media. But the media is the fourth estate. They're the vanguard against totalitarianism. It's the media that was the only shot to stand up against Hitler. It was the media that should have done a better job when we had Japanese internment camps. We need the media. There's no doubt that there's a ton of ignorance in this country. And we rely on the media to educate, and we rely on the media to be sober. And it's not just Fox News. All the other stations, instead of having sober news coverage and having, intelligent discussions, they have a show, they have two shields from Trump's side, and they have two shields from Clinton's side, and it's not journalism. And it's very, very sad. Here we have a chance to vote our first woman president. And I'll cry when that happens, thankfully. But Trump shouldn't be a frenemy. How come Ralph Nader, who runs for president every 4 years and has dedicated his life to consumerism, is very educated, not that I would necessarily vote for him over Clinton, how come he didn't get the same airtime? It's disgraceful. It's a shame. And my wife is anxious. And I'm saying, oh, don't worry about it. But we're the laughing stock of the country, of the world. Other countries, you read the editorial cartoons, they can't believe what's going on. So this frenemy thing is a very big problem. And forget about the bipartisanship in Congress. and working together. That's never going to happen until the media steps up and starts acting responsibly and stops looking for the money and starts looking. Walter Cronkite and Edward R. Murrow are rolling over in their graves.
Ken, thank you very much for that cri de coeur. I know a lot of heads are nodding out there along with you. We have to end the segment in just a minute because we have the governor of Pennsylvania coming up next. But Catherine Rampell, Washington Post columnist, what were you thinking as you listened to Ken? Partly because he was responding to your framing as Donald Trump as a frenemy of the media.
You know, this is something that has torn at my conscience throughout this campaign, and I think it's a real problem. The U.S. media industry, as I'm sure you well know, has been struggling. A lot of the legacy companies, at the very least, newspapers, even TV stations, have been struggling. We've been facing these sort of structural problems with our business model. And in a sense, Donald Trump has been a gift to us because he says something entertaining. He does something outrageous almost every day. There's a new scandal. There's something else to cover. And so it's been a gift economically that will hopefully disappear at some point very soon. But many of us are very disturbed by the fact that this is what attracts eyeballs and that these are the incentives we face. You know, for a while there were calls to have a media blackout of some kind for Donald Trump, that we should all collectively decide, you know, because we're a conspiracy of sorts, that we will no longer give Trump free advertising, free coverage. And like any cartel, that would be very hard to enforce just because there are these strong incentives to cheat and to steal more eyeballs that a competitor is leaving on the table. So we face very bad incentives. That's partly our fault that we are responding to those incentives, but it's also partly the fault of our readership and our viewership and our listenership, for that matter, that this is what people want to listen to and hear. And so I think there has been there's blame to go around is basically what I'm getting to. And I do hope that those of us in the media do better at holding candidates' feet to the fire, at concentrating on more substantive issues. I also hope that there is sufficient appetite amongst readers, listeners, and viewers to consume that content as well.
Catherine Rampell, Washington Post columnist, thank you for joining us on Election Day.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. The governor of Pennsylvania, Tom Wolf, next, and more of your calls. Stay with us.